Okay, we continue for our blessed subject on our table today, fair value measurement unit of account. Mariela.
Thank you, Hans. So we are going to be discussing today agenda paper 4, and the purpose of this paper is to follow up the discussions that the board had already in February on this topic to address the questions received on the unit of account for investments that are subsidiaries to inventors or associates. And in particular, these questions ask for clarity on whether the unit of account is investment as a whole or whether the unit of account is an individual financial instruments that make up that investment. And the paper also addresses the interaction between the measurement for value and the unit of account, in particular when we do have level one inputs for the underlying financial instruments. For the purposes of organizing the discussions, we have thought to structure the discussions as follows. We will tackle first measurements that are categorized within level 2 or level 3, and then we will discuss level 1 measurements. We will then stop and talk separately about fair value in relation to the impairment testing. So when talking about those measurements, we will also discuss the effects that different profiles of investors have in the measurements of those investments and the implications in the measurements that the unit of account have. So if we start now then talking about the level 2, level 3 fair value measurements, the discussion in the board paper starts in paragraph 24. And we have to say that the staff believes that the guidance in IFRS 13 is in general clear to perform those type of measurements. And in particular, paragraph 24 quotes paragraph 69 of IFRS 13, which states that an entity shall select inputs that are consistent with the characteristics of the asset or liability being measured. And for example, if the board concluded that the unit of account was the investment, a fair value measurement would in that case reflect characteristics of such an asset. And for example, an investor might consider any value coming from control in its measurement. This section also addresses the effects that different profiles of investors might have on the fair value measurements. And this is starting from paragraph 29 of the paper. And to perform this analysis, we have classified investors as financial investors and strategic investors. Financial investors are broadly entities such as investment entities. The strategic investors are entities that would be preparing separate financial statements. And apart from doing this classification, examples 1 and 2 illustrate the measurements of investments held by financial investors. Example 3 illustrates the measurement of investments held by strategic investors. And having gone through this exercise, we have concluded two main general conclusions. The first one is that an investor, regardless whether it is a financial or a strategic investor, should consider all facts and circumstances surrounding its investment. And for example, in the case of financial investors, the shareholders' agreements are key documents because they do convey and they do have and they do include rights that should be analyzed and assessed because they have an impact in the measurement of controlling and non-controlling interests. And this is illustrated in example 1. The second conclusion is that measurements that look at the whole investment result in measurements with a more robust economic basis. And this is because some of the features of those investments and the adjustments that those features might require make more economic sense when we consider the unit of account being the investment as a whole. That is the case, for example, of the a possible discount for the lack of liquidity. This basically concludes the summary of the section about level 2 and level 3 fair value measurements. As mentioned before, we believe that the measurement guidance in IFRS 13 is clear enough to perform these measurements, with only one exception. And this is, if the board concludes that the unit of account is the individual financial instruments, then the staff thinks that reference to control premiums and controlling interests in paragraph 69 of IFRS 13 could potentially be confusing and might require amendment. We go then to level one fair value measurements. And in that case, we do think that the standard is less clear than in level two, level three. If there are level one inputs available, there are currently two views. Some parties think that those level one inputs should be used without adjustments. Some other parties think that those inputs might be adjusted. And this is due to the reading of two different paragraphs in the standards, paragraph 69 and 80, which are reproduced in paragraph 43 of the paper. And the reading of these two paragraphs basically lead to two different views. View one would represent the parties that think that there is no level one input for the unit of account, for the investment as a whole. And as a result, if they have to measure an investment at fair value whose underlying financial instruments are quoted, they would use adjustments, or they would apply adjustments to those quoted prices, or they would use a valuation technique. View two, on the contrary, would just use those level one prices without any adjustments. And as a result of these two views, then we have two different options, which are described in paragraph 45 of the paper. And basically, option one would be measuring those investments, considering the characteristics of the investments, and that might result in adjusted level one inputs or using valuation techniques. And option two is, even though acknowledging that the unit of account is the investment as a whole, if there is a level one input, the measurement of that investment should be equal to the multiplication of the quoted prices times the shares held. What we have done in paragraph 49 is to include a table that summarizes the pros and cons of these two options. And in paragraph 49, we have summarized the implications that these two options might have for any amendments to IFRS 13. So basically, option one and option two consider that the conclusion on the unit of account is the investment. However, if the conclusion on the unit of account was the individual financial instruments, we believe that references to control premium and controlling interest would need also to be amended, because they refer to a unit of account that is different from the individual financial instruments. And with that, the discussion on the level two, level three, and level one measurements finishes from the point of view of giving you an overview. And if you would like to make any questions, we're open to.
Thank you, Mariela. I think it was a pretty clear paper, making the questions very clear to us. I must say, I did pick up the big book and start reading the paragraph 69, and it was really in parts unreadable, and if only because we have a tendency, or sometimes we use sentences that go on for 6-7 lines, and then it's impossible to write such long sentences that make any sense. And I also think that, so first of all, we shouldn't do that, but also I think we should probably invest more heavily in the editing of the final drafts of our standards.
In fairness to the staff that wrote it, it was a joint effort with the US FASB, so maybe they need to invest more in their editing process as well.
Okay, well, that being said, I mean, I was thinking about these poor people in Thailand who have to translate this.
The objective was to have words that were the same, identical to the U.S. standard.
Okay. So it was transported.
And they started with their standard first.
Anyway. Rego.
I think the most controversial ones on label one. And when we discuss the fair value measurement guidance, I think the starting point is what asset we're going to measure. And I don't feel it necessary to put question back to the staff, you know. We measure, are going to measure the whole or individual? This first question, you know.
Yeah.
And if the conclusion is the whole, as I remember, I fully support Martin's views. And how can you find the price in the market as a whole? Mm. And there is a possibility, you know, there is another market, you know. There's individual transaction market, and there are also possibilities, you know, a few merchant banks or private equity companies hunting, for example, Weibo control now 40% of GE, and different, you know, big, you know, strategic investor try to hunting for this 40%, and there will be a separate asset, separate price, different from the price we will use the P in the market price. I personally feel they are different.
So you would say unit of account is the whole, and a level one
should not be P times Q.
Should not be. Which basically is level two then. You're choosing for, isn't it?
Yes.
Be careful.
Level one can be used to.
Yeah. To as.
No.
It would be level three.
There are two possibilities. One is no level at all. Second one, there is a separate market, you know, hunting for that piece.
Yeah. So that would still be a level one.
Yes.
Act of the market. Yeah. For the stakes.
I know what I can add.
It's probably at least a less active market if it exists.
Of course.
But still, everyone. Well, just take a simple example. I have an investment of 30% in a company. I would like to get control of that company for strategic reasons. I can try to buy on the market, but the prices will go up because I will see that I have this intention to buy, so it may be too costly. And I find out that one investor somewhere owns 20% in that company, and I can make a deal to buy out this investor as a whole, and I will find in the books of this investor the 20% I'm looking for. I'm likely to pay a certain amount to get that investment, and probably more than just the market price on day one, although less than trying to build up my 20% by buying on the market day after day after day. If I don't recognize the whole investment as a unit of account, then I have to take a loss immediately after this acquisition because I go back to P times Q. And I don't think it makes sense to me in financial terms. It's not the reality of business life.
Daryl?
I'm to a certain extent repeating what I said last month when we spoke about this. I have some sympathy with the argument, and it comes down to a certain extent what Philippe has just said. The problem is that the argument that we're making in support of this particular issue, level one pricing for controlled investments, is exactly the same for any other lump investment you've got. So to take Philippe's example, if I just bought 10% of the shares, because 10% of the shares gave me the ability to control something within the market, I may have paid over the price for that 10%, so should I also be able to do it for the 10%, which is neither consolidated nor an associate? So my problem is it feels to me like we're picking a particular piece of something here and saying we'll treat this one differently to what we treat with it, to how we treat anything else, and that's my concern. Mm-hmm. So I can understand the economic rationale behind it, but I think to my mind the consistency of listed equity is the more important measure for me, and so I would not support going down the route for the level.
Although we don't recognize this as an asset, if you an acquisition, you buy a company which has an assembled sales force. Is the value of this assembled sales force that we don't recognize, by the way, but just take an example, is it a collection of individuals, P times Q, or is it more? Maybe it's more.
And the hassle is that one of the things that we're dealing with here that's complicating the thing is we're thinking of subsidiaries, our subsidiary accounting is different because we take goodwill and things like that into account. But the point is that we're thinking of subsidiaries in a completely different space here. We're thinking of subsidiaries when we are fair valuing them for investment entities. And that's a different game. Yes. That is a different game. And that, to my mind, is what makes the difference here.
Pat?
I share Daryl's view. Let me try to explore it in a different way. When the board wrote the standards, let's talk about the unit of account for separate financial statements. Because I don't think some of us might have been on the board when they did that standard. And they eliminated the use of the equity method and they substituted fair value. And I think the intention was to give the user of the separate accounts a different view than they get if for a controlled entity. Because the board had already decided that the best representation or the most useful accounting for a controlled entity was consolidation, not fair value. And therefore, it says to me, by calling for the use of fair value in the separate accounts, they weren't trying to represent a controlled entity. They were trying to represent an investment in financial instruments. So that leads me to the conclusion that they meant IFRS 9, IFRS 39, in total, accounting for them as financial instruments. We were, I think almost all of us except Mary, were on the board when we did the investment entity exemption to consolidation. And that clearly says, refers to IFRS 9, and the majority of respondents to the exposure draft supported that. And IFRS 9 says what IFRS 9 says, and no one disagrees that IFRS 9 says value each financial instrument. And therefore, I believe that's what we intended. Now, my other point is about users and why IFRS 13 seems to have a biased approach towards P times Q. And in Mariella's paper, she did some outreach to users. And granted, it was a small sample, but Mariella, correct me if I'm wrong. What they seemed to be saying was that they agreed with your examples, but they said when there's a P, a level one input, they think it should be P times Q because it's more reliable.
Yeah.
And if there were no level one input, if they were doing the valuation themselves, they would do it as the paper does and put in the control premium, etc. However, they don't think that's reliable when management's doing it. And if there's a level one input, they'd rather have management using the level one input. And so I'm of the view that we stay with unit of account
as
in IFRS 9. One thing, I think, and Mariella or Sue, I believe that I don't think this is an issue for separate financial statements in the U.S., but it is an issue for investment entities, and in the U.S. they use P times Q when there is a level one input. Yeah. And when there's not a level one input, they would then consider control premiums, etc. Is that correct? And it's got nothing to do with unit of account. It's got to do with available inputs.
Yes.
Correct.
That's
so you would not agree with question one?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes. And you would choose for option two, right?
Option two.
Yes.
Yes.
Mary?
substance and then process comments, and they're separate. And maybe I'll do the process one first just to get it out of the way, which is IFRS 13 was a converged standard that we issued, developed and issued jointly with FASB. And before we finalize a way forward or even a proposal, I guess I would like to ask FASB if they have considered interpretive guidance on this issue to resolve this question. I know that in last month's paper, there was the note that the boards considered at the time they were doing IFRS 13 whether to address this question and decided not to. There was a reference in the submission that got forwarded to us that U.S. GAAP does X, but I think that's maybe industry guidance rather than something that the FASB itself has issued.
We spoke to the FASB staff in finalizing the paper to agree what they would agree with us putting in the paper mm-hmm. in terms of the U.S. GAAP perspective. Mm-hmm. The staff view is that U.S. GAAP is clear that if it's level one, it should be P times Q.
Yes. But has the staff gone back to the board? Because when I read paragraph 69 of IFRS 13 as excerpted in this paper, you have a statement that you adjust for characteristics such as a control premium, and then it says you don't adjust level one. And if your holding is of level one is what gives you control, I don't see how you reconcile those two statements. And while the staff may have the view that level one is clear, I think it's a question of has the EITF or
I don't think they've been asked to interpret it based on what I understand. Mm-hmm. And certainly based on a number of staff who were involved in the drafting of the project, mm-hmm. also one of our former board members and the current staff there, I think they're of the view that the way that they read paragraph 69 is that it's you consider the control premium unless it's level one.
Okay.
I think that's how they read that paragraph.
So what we're saying is if we go that same route, if we went that same route, which is not what our staff is recommending, if we went that same route, we would have a disconnect between the concept of control premium is relevant or not when you have level one versus having level two and three. So we have just this conceptual disconnect between...
Yeah. My sense is I agree with Pat, from what I understand, and Mariella Chippen, if you disagree, mm-hmm. from what I understand of the original board debate, mm-hmm. in the case of the level one, they decided that reliability in effect trumped the relevance, if you like, in this scenario where there were level one inputs, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree completely with that statement.
I think my memory is slightly different. You know, when we debate, you know, blogging effect, we have to divide two stage of discussion. When we discuss blockage effect, not discuss our control premium and discount, during that period, the conclusion is like you said, you know, the board decides we should stick on P times Q because, you know, even you want to say you should take into consideration, how can you do it? But during that time, no, you know, premium and discount discussion. Premium discount discussion is laid down, bring in. And then we decide that you have to take into consideration premium discounts. And after that, we have concluding discussions, I think, about maybe January 2010 or 11. And that is whether we should answer the unit account issues in this standards, but decide not. And so I don't think it is so clear, as you said, you know. When we discuss blockage effect, it is clear, I agree with you. But, you know, premium discount is added after that.
Well, the unit of account was discussed in October 2010, and the decision at that meeting was that the answer about the unit of account was outside the project, and it had to be looked at the different IFRSs. So it was decided that the project was not going to answer those questions. If there was level one inputs, it didn't really matter whether we had an answer or not. That was the preferred option. if we didn't have level one, then the discussions were basically saying that we would include control, would include premiums and discounts if the unit of accounts of those assets, if market participants would incorporate in their pricing of those assets, those premiums or those discounts, without discussing what was the unit of account. So it was a disconnection between premiums and discounts and the unit of account, because the unit of account was not going to be tackled by the standard.
Well, then in looking at that, I mean, I going back to the comment about substance rather than about process, I'm really loath to personally to overcome a level one input. But having said that, I am almost more disturbed by having a disconnect between our, you know, what we think is relevant to measurement of fair value, depending upon whether you call it level one versus level two and level three, you know, or three. So reluctantly, I would support the staff recommendation, not because it wasn't well thought through, but because it seems like a choice between the devil and the deep blue sea about, you know, whether you override level one or whether you have a disconnect between your measurement.
Not if you conclude that the unit of account should be the financial instrument and not the investment as a whole.
I can't reconcile unit of account being the financial instrument with the discussion of a control premium
That's got nothing to do. The unit of account is at the standards level. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at 27 mm-hmm. and 10 to determine the unit of account.
Yeah.
So that paragraph 69, isn't really relevant to the unit of account decision.
Exactly.
And once you've got the unit of account, then you have a level one input.
I can compile the requirements in a different order and then come to a different answer. And then to answer the very real concern that Daryl had about why are we differentiating this class from another, I think I'd go back to the evil paragraph 69, where it says, inconsistent with the unit of account in the IFRS that requires or permits. I think that's how you scope it down to associates and subsidiaries and not open Pandora's box about block discounts or premiums.
My problem was more, why are we making that differentiation?
So exactly.
You're making the split between level one and level two.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to have a cliff effect there. All we've done is then move the cliff effect
right.
to a different place.
That's why I say it's devil in the deep blue sea, choosing where you have your cliff effect. But I put it there.
The argument, the first one was the 10%. That worries me. It sits in the mind investment entity. I'm very worried about the users who'd say, we know it's not the right figure, but we don't trust management to adjust it. Put in the wrong figure and we'll adjust it to what we think it is. I mean, it seems very odd.
Well, that's exactly what they're telling us in biological assets as well, I think. And I think this is what Pat was saying this morning. What we heard in biological assets was not that they didn't think they would like to know the fair value of those biological assets, but they just were concerned that the number they were getting wasn't reliable, and if it wasn't reliable, it wasn't useful. And so,
more a useful argument than a reliability argument.
Yeah,
that's right. So it comes down to relevance versus reliability.
I'd
go with the staff and relevance, quite frankly, on both level one and the other levels.
Martin.
Yeah, and I also support staff recommendation because we say, okay, that in this kind of situations that really the P times Q is more more.
Martin, to interrupt, but we have a recommendation on the unit of account. We don't have any recommendation on the measurement. So the measurement is open for you to consider for level one.
Know my opinion. I think when we always say, okay, it's more reliable P times Q because we don't trust the management. I don't know if this notion is really right because, man, a reliable price is really for maybe one kind of share, but we don't have really observable prices for a kind of controlling investment in this kind of subsidiary, because when I give you an example, when I work with Deutsche Bank, we acquired Postbank.
And we had, I think, already with options and some other thirds, there was a free float of existing of 5%. And all the remaining shareholders expecting that, okay, Deutsche Bank will pay more for that. And the fair value, if you would have used the fair value for that, it would have increased our carrying value of that. And clearly there was an listed observable market price. But I would really say this, if we have used that, the reliable value of our investment would be absolutely, I think, not representing really the fair value of this kind. But we're always saying, okay, that is more reliable. But I really don't think so. It's reliable if you want to buy some shares. But it is not reliable value. It is not observable. Really, it is not any observable value if you want to buy 50% of a company. And that is, for me, my main argument why I think it is, we should not have saying, okay, it is always P times Q, because I think it is not more reliable in certain situations. In these certain situations are at least when you're getting to this threshold of control premium or control or even significant influence, then you pay different prices. And the market participants paid different prices. So why is it more reliable? But I think as a compromise, if we don't trust the management coming up with different values, why don't really requiring a disclosure and saying, okay, if you have really a fair value of a listed company and this is a subsidiary of you, and if you come to a different fair value, then you should really disclose why you think it is different and reconcile it. And then we have this information.
That might not be such a bad idea, yeah. Especially since it's a very cheap disclosure.
Yeah, because you have this.
Because you have the information. Yeah.
Inexpensive.
I'm a bit wary of always using disclosures as a way out, but here it's a very cheap solution. And if the investors do not trust the numbers of management, if they think that the control premium is being very optimistically estimated, then they have the market price at their disposal.
And can I add another point? You know, in some jurisdictions, there are different markets. In some markets, you know, not, you know, decentralized, or maybe centralized, but you can transfer, you know, the block, and still, level one, you know, you can have observed level one, you know, market, level one price, but the price is not priced based on individual shares, based on the ownership, 20%, 10%, you can buy.
Okay, Pat?
Very quickly, I put the answer to this question in, do we have mulligans in standard setting? A mulligan, as you know, in golf is a do-over.
What is it?
A do-over.
If you miss rounds, you get the free chance for the second. Like a second serve in tennis.
I tend to do with my driver. I usually hook it or slice it. So
a floating mulligan, or then you're on the first tee?
Exactly. On all 18.
Julian and Philippe Cantar.
Patricia's analysis, I think, is 100% correct. I cannot disagree with it at all. Exactly. her memory is spot on, and so is Suzanne's. The point, though, that I believe that we should look at here, and this is the reason why I'd like a do-over of this, is that I think the unit of account should be determined at the level of aggregation that market participants are engaging in. So when, you know, a private equity firm or, you know, a Carl Icahn is going out and making a big acquisition, they're not thinking, I'm going to buy 1,000 shares times, you know, this current price. They're valuing the investment as a whole. And so I actually think we got it wrong the first time, and hence that's the reason why I'd like to go with the staff's recommendation. But I can't disagree with the analysis.
Can I just respond to that? I mean, fair value is an exit value. So if we were going to go in that direction, then I think we would have to look at what, let's say, the investment entity's intention is on disposal of its controlling interest. Is it going to do it by an IPO, and therefore it would be P times Q, or is it going to dispose of it in a block?
And then you might get a discount.
And then there might be a discount. Exactly. So.
Well, what if that's 5 or 7 years down the road and they can't answer that question?
No, not. Yeah? Maybe not. Maybe
but
not a discount. You don't
that's one of the reasons why I don't think we should veer away from the IFRS 9 valuation, is because we can't answer those questions. And fair value is an exit value, not an entry value. Mm-hmm. And so we can't have them measuring fair value based on the assumption that they're going to rebuy that control block every day.
Yeah. How do you exit? That's a question. Exit value, how do you exit? Is it selling one share by one share by one share? Or is it by selling your 50% block to a company which is interested in buying your development? If you are in developing a research company, you will sell it to big pharma business. You are not going to sell shares one by one.
And in the case of a separate entity, in separate accounts, they have no intention of exiting it ever.
Yeah.
So why would you do an exit value at all? So, but we're saying fair value is an exit value. So we might as well just stick to what we said.
I must say, finally, you do have a liquid market, an active market, and you cannot use it. This accounting is very funny business every now and then.
I prefer option 2, not the staff's recommendation. I do understand what the margin said. However, looking back my experience, I think whenever we have a level 1 input for individual instrument, we'd better use that individual instrument. This is because, we are talking about control premium. And if we acquire a subsidiary which is more than 50%, then normally it's going to be consolidated, and normally it could be delisted. Then suppose there is a level 1 input for the individual financial instruments. So that normally means we do not acquire more than 50%, say like 25% or something like that, as an equity earning purposes. And still there is a market for that equity investment. And then here comes the situation that you stop investing that entity. So you decided to sell it. So you want exit from that investment. Normally, we sell it for the individual investment basis rather than 25% as a whole. Of course, we could sell it 25% as a whole if we were lucky. But if there is an individual fair value of individual investment, then normally we would end up selling it individual equity basis. So therefore, I think we'd better go to the option 2, because this is not just for investment entities accounting standard. This would be applied to the normal company as well. So therefore, I prefer option 2.
Don't you think if you put 25% on the market, you might drive the price down?
You'd be clever. You'd work through a bank and dribble it out.
But there is no...
Yeah, that's how you go to Goldman Sachs and ask them to do it in 3 months, right?
But the literature says clearly that you do not consider that. If there's enough in IFRS 13, I can't remember the paragraph, it talks about it. If there is no requirement that you got to put the whole thing in the market. It's very, very clear. I don't think we should go by just because I want to put the whole thing in the market, I should evaluate it that way. I forgot the paragraph, but those of you who are not here when IFRS 13 is debated, I think it was given. Whenever there's level 1, thou shall use that. And I agree with Mary coming back a little later and quibbling about the conflicting paragraph, but the last sentence in IFRS 13, paragraph 69, she's talking, which is talking in isolation, is clearly says that. And the whole purpose, when the whole deliberation is based on this. And I really think...
Is this the one that you're looking for, even if the market's normal daily trading volume?
Yeah, that's the one. And also there's enough written there. There's no requirement for you to sell each the whole thing.
Let me ask you a question for those of you who are supporting the staff's recommendation.
We have one.
But the staff's small group meeting suggested to me that it is investment as a whole. So.
But this is the unit of account, Jansa. Yeah. And then from there, we, for the measurement purposes, we have option one, which is, okay, even though the unit of account is the investment, we would adjust, if necessary, level one inputs. Option two would not allow level one inputs to be adjusted. So what is the staff recommendation when you're saying...
The way we talked this in January or December, if I think it's December when we talked this issue. In the small group we talked in the thing. I thought the staff wanted to do investment as a whole and measurement as a whole. But my comment to those of you, one question for those of you who are in favor of taking this as one whole. Suppose I have 22% in a company. 20% gives me some significant influence in that company. The 2% doesn't give me any extra influence than this. So why should I value the 2% as with the block of 20? I just bought it 22, but I have no... I get my significant influence, I get my board seat based on my 20%. The 2%, what should I do with that? And why should I lump it with this? I really think if there is a P times Q, we got to use P times Q.
No, the control premium will not differ if you have 20 or 22%, so we will not have a different.
No, you buy the whole thing from somebody, then
what happens? But there is a difference. But if you have 18 or more than 20%, that is a difference. But if your example was 20 or 22,
okay, let's say
there is no difference.
I would ask, PK, do you have one portfolio or two portfolios in this case?
I think
you have two portfolios. The one 20% you keep and 2% you can play with it and trade. Maybe you have a different valuation approach then.
Let's first see what we think about question one. Who agrees with the staff that the unit of account is the investment as a whole?
Question one is fine.
Nine.
Just kidding.
So then the question is between option one, where we say the unit of account is prevalent, or option two, where prioritization of where you use the market value.
So this is for level one?
Yes.
It is for level one.
Yeah. Let's first take the major decision, then think about possible disclosures. So who would be in favor of option one, which is to take the unit of account as the basis for a measurement?
The whole investment. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
So that means that the others are in favor of option two?
Yes.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Yeah. Can I just think two scenarios and test whether we have similar views? One scenario is you have only one market. That is, what we're talking about, level one is the active market, you have individual price. And there is a possibility that even though one company, there are two markets. Another possibility, just like Martin said, no price, observed price at all. But there's another possibility, you have two markets. And particularly now, a lot of private equity investment, it's quite possible. We talk about level one. Which level one would mean?
Yeah. The market is defined as the most advantageous market in 13.
But we should be careful, as I said, the asset we are valuing, this is a starting point. We start with first conclusion is as a whole. So the assets we are talking about as a whole, we are talking about that one. And if there are two markets, one market is for individual transactions, another one is for the group. So we say switch to that price.
I'm not sure.
As Patricia said, which is the one that is the most. So if there is a group market, which that gives better prices, then that's the.
And that might have nothing to do with subsidiary versus or subsidiaries and associates. It might just be 5% that you can sell on that group market. If that's the most advantageous market, and you can access it because you've got 5%.
And 13 also talks about retail versus wholesale.
9 votes to the issue.
We need to 9 votes?
Why?
And otherwise?
Otherwise, I think we've got 2
This is an easy?
Yeah. Yeah,
but we'll agree in the end. We will agree in the end.
Huh? 9 votes.
Ian, you wanted to.
Do we have enough for P times Q?
But can I ask you something, though? We need 8 for this, but for publication of ED, we need 9.
Yes.
So
given this is the key issue, I would have thought that we'd need enough votes.
We'll see how it goes, though, whether people want to ask the question.
I think we'll need 10.
Next month.
Well, we'll need more than 8 anyway, Jan. Yeah. Yes, given the time.
I mean, who will dissent over this?
I mean, doesn't the question change when we actually come to changing it? The question then becomes, whatever route we choose to follow, there are problems with the clarity in the standard.
Yeah.
And the question then is a different question. Do we want to clarify the standard?
Okay. I guess the question, would anybody object if we were to expose it on the basis of P times Q?
Patricia, you can't dissent because you won the count.
Sure, she wants the unit.
She means dissent. No, you didn't. It's P times Q. Was 8 votes.
8 votes for P times Q, right?
Yeah.
8 votes for P times Q.
Yes, exactly what you asked.
Oh, I thought it was only 7 for P times
Q. No.
No, 8.
We're doing good.
So I think we have to ask the question, Hans, I would suggest that we ask the question whether anybody would actually dissent.
With this
dissent of what else is in this document?
P times Q.
Just checking, saying the unit of account is the investment, but when you have level 1,
you have
P times Q override trumps the control premium.
Well, ask a question
like
on that.
IFRS certainly missing the word nonetheless, despite whatever.
Yeah. What's the basis going to say in terms of why it's P times Q?
Because of reliability and transparency of the measurement. So it's to favor those characteristics of qualities in the measurement.
Exactly the opposite of the conceptual framework. Conceptual framework says relevance trumps reliability, but here it's an exception to the principle in the conceptual framework.
I think we can come up with a much more cogent answer than that.
Well, not and still have question one answered the way we've done it.
We had a long discussion on when we discussed the fair value, and there were 3 of us, I think, who were looking for this block thinking, and we lost. And now we stick with what we decided before. That's my thinking.
Yeah, I agree with.
All we're doing is we're clarifying the decision as it was previously.
No, I don't think we are. This is different.
I think it's a shame.
I think in terms of how you explain it, you probably go back and point to the inconsistency in paragraph 69, mm-hmm. and in seeking to provide guidance, we. As the staff said in its recommendations for A, that because of the conflict, we decided to prioritize level 1 inputs rather than the unit of account decision that we made. That, you know, that's, it's a very specific decision and explanation.
I agree with Stephen. I see a conflict between us voting yes on question 1 and then going with option 2. To me, you go with yes on 1 and you go with option 1, or you say no.
Exactly.
You know, you're P times Q.
Well, so. It's not in conflict for the ones which are not listed. If you are level 2, you are not in conflict. But if you are level 1 measurement, you are in conflict between the 2 answers.
And I think one thing we have found out so far during the outreach is that it's only a very small population we're actually talking about in practical terms. Mm. They are controlled level 1 investments. Obviously, it matters when it arises.
In investment entities, wait a minute, in investment entities,
based
where
on the
we
research,
move from consolidation down to fair value measurement, it might be more.
Yeah, but we have done some initial research, and the feedback is that's still quite a small population.
And in separate financial statements for equity investments carried at fair value, there might be a very large population, and I think an additional reason why the board intended it to be the individual unit, it was to reduce the burden on the preparer, the separate financial statement, so they could just go to the market, take the price, and put it in their separate financial statements without going through a lot of difficulty to come up.
Sometimes they like the burden. Sometimes they like the burden if the outcome is okay.
Insurance is a poster child for that one.
Well, we've decided.
We're consistently told that people can't come up with values,
but we don't want to write something if we can't issue it.
Yeah.
No.
So the question is, who will dissent if we go along with the majority 8-7 vote?
I think. The problem is how we foresee the rationale for the first question and then connect it to the P times Q. This is the issue. So. I think it's maybe a little
it's
bit
reliability.
No, but reliability is not. Well, I can't disagree. That
you can disagree.
It's easier.
People voted. Now the question is: do we? Is this objectional enough for people to dissent on the final standard?
I would probably dissent.
I also.
I did not dissent the first time, so I must be I did not agree with the P times Q from the very beginning. But I would stick to my previous position, which I accept as the second best choice. I would not dissent.
Okay, let's go ahead.
But let's get the ED out and we can see what the reaction is.
So two dissents.
We have a second round. Okay.
I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah.
Would those answers then be aligned
I have to remind some people that there is a quota for dissents. I have not announced it yet, but an unofficial quota for dissents.
Can we earn money?
Annual quota. It can be overcome by
how
financial
much
consideration.
So Hans, you don't allow me to go.
For those who are listening, this was a joke.
He had to clarify that because no one laughed.
Okay.
Can I say one thing?
No, we have to answer the question B.
Should we then assume that the answers provided by you would be aligned to the answers that you would give for the next question, which is what is the fair value? So how would you measure the fair value for cash generating units that are listed? Would you opt for option one or option two? Would your question to this answer be different from the answer that you just provided?
Do you want us to be consistent with question one or question 2A?
Question 2A.
And do you want to diverge?
Some people were perhaps a little bit inconsistent between.
We don't have a problem with the unit of account in that particular instance. So the unit of account is a cash generating unit.
Yeah.
And now the question is, if that cash generating unit is a subsidiary that is listed, would you measure the fair value of that cash generating unit based on unadjusted level one inputs, option two, or would you adjust level one inputs for maybe control any other characteristics of this cash generating unit?
So would you use P times Q or not?
Yeah.
So after the previous decision, what do you recommend us?
It's open.
P times Q.
Do the same as we did.
And I have one question. Do you understand why, because we discussed earlier US GAAP treatment? My understanding is under US GAAP for the impairment testing, they allow adjusting.
They do.
Yeah. They have not allowed for our first question here, but for impairment testing,
but
they're doing.
They don't use value in use.
That is my question. Is that the reason?
For equity method, there's no value in use.
Because if they are so convinced that it is a better value, why they do it in one, but not in the other?
Instruments, there is no value in use. IFRS 9 instruments, there is no.
But we're talking about the impairment test.
Okay.
This is fair value less cost of disposal, not value in use.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Never voted.
C times Q?
Can I just say something, though?
Can we follow P times Q here, too?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Like we did. Yes? All those in favor?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Hans, can I just say one thing, though? It would be very helpful.
Majority,
It will be very helpful if we remind the all the board members, especially those who want to dissent, just for to see whether they still want to dissent based on the discussion in BC 152 of IFRS 13 to BC 158 about the blockage factor, the premiums or discounts. I think I remember this discussion quite well, and it's a very good discussion to have to reconsider for the decision, because there are some people who want to dissent it. My worry is that it goes to the root of IFRS 13. So I would recommend BC 152 to 158, just so that it will be helpful to...
If you put it on your night table, okay?
Don't dissent. You are consistent.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. You are very good advice.
All right. Thank you very much.
4 at 10, right?